You're listening to a Sound Vision Online podcast.
Find us at soundvisiononline.co.uk. Hello there and welcome to the Summer Sound Vision Online compilation, kindly supported by BT. I'm Michael Selby.
And I'm Sharon Jennings.
And I'm Joe Kenny.
Well, coming up on the show, we hear from Joanne Wilson about the new Online Today digital skills project.
And our very own Jackie Brown shows us how to say something to Siri in the latest of her Tech Chat podcasts. And we hear from Andy Morrow, the first Children's Eye Care Liaison Officer in RNIB, right here in Northern Ireland.
And I caught up with our volunteer development team to talk about our technology support squad. And I finally got an interview with Kelly Gallagher.
All that and so much more besides. You could say you couldn't beat it with a big stick. But before we crack on, are we all well? Haven't seen you in a while. Done anything exciting lately?
Well, no, but
I'm getting a new front door, that's all I'll say. Instead of a holiday, I'm buying a front door. So.
Oh, there you go, wow.
This show is the epitome of the rock and roll lifestyle, isn't it?
It's quite random, I will give you that. Yeah, so new front door. South of France, no.
Is it one of those PVC doors, or are you going for the wooden door?
Well, because I live in a block of apartments, and there has to be kind of like a certain uniformity. I'm boring myself now. I can't imagine what this is like for anyone to listen to. And enough about my door.
Sharon.
Listen, well, here's...
Do you know, I actually haven't got that much more exciting to say. But unless here, we want to start talking about curtains.
Exciting stuff. So the website... Joe, tell us about that. That's quite big and exciting. It's had a bit of a facelift and is all up and running under its new name.
Indeed. Well, I mean, obviously, regular listeners will know about the changes, and there's been a few. For one, Sound Vision Online, the whole new name. But we have a new website, soundvisiononline.co.uk, so it's slightly different than the old one. And it's up and running. It's doing very well, and we've got our podcast going up there on a kind of weekly basis. I'm very, very happy with it, and I'm very, very keen to hear from any listeners out there, because it is new, and I would like to hear what people think, because it's very much built around what people want to have on a website, you know.
But a lot of work has gone into it, and I think it's been worth it. I think so.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, it is. It feels good to me.
But you're a bit of a technical whiz yourself, though, aren't you, Joe?
Well, I mean, I am, for things that I use on a daily basis. Like, for example, I love my smartphone. I'm an iPhone user. I like websites, I like podcasts, I'm sitting here in front of a computer and mixing desks and stuff. I like all that, but there's other things that I just would not go near.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I just don't like, I can't stand the whole tablet iPad thing.
Oh no, they're brilliant. They're great, honestly. They're so easy. I'll tell you, my dad is now 82, and for his 80th birthday a couple of years ago, myself and my two brothers, we bought my dad an iPad, and he was also like chuffed with it, because, you know, he knew we'd spend a bit of money, but we weren't entirely sure how much he'd use it, and he loves it. My dad, 82-year-old man, on Facebook, you know, kind of sort of checking out what sort of people he, you know, knew years and years ago were up to now. I mean,
Has he got his own page?
No, he must do. Actually, that's the point.
Yes,
I don't think he ever updates it, or I don't think, you know.
I'm going to try and friend him. But I think I think for older people, iPads are the way to go. It's touch screen. They're very easy.
Very intuitive.
Very intuitive, very easy to use.
They're too big.
No, they're not.
Oh, that's because you've got used to smartphone.
Honestly, if you're used to a smartphone, it's such a small step to get used to an iPad.
Of course.
I know when I've used it with blind people, the iPads, I have found it a bit frustrating. I don't know what your experience is, Joe, because when you go to the accessibility stuff and you put on voice and magnification, it's very difficult to work. I found it very difficult to work. It'd be great to actually hear from listeners who do use iPads what their experience is.
I mean, I find, like, my kids, I have a son of 5 and a daughter of 9, and like the iPad, more than even a laptop with Windows and all that, but the iPad is just so second nature to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing to them to just, they're flying through screens and web pages and things and games, and it is quite incredible to witness.
Yeah, I totally agree. My 4-year-old niece, she's exactly the same. It's just, as you say, second nature. There is, you know, understanding kind of, you do this, you do that with your finger, it does this, that, and the other. And there's kind of, my mum's sort of trying to work out how to turn the DVD player on, you know, this sort
of
stuff.
That's kind of like myself going, I can't work the microwave, so I don't use it.
Well, IT skills now is considered to be an essential skill. Before, you had reading, writing, and arithmetic, and now computer skills is considered an essential skill. And if you're grown up now, I mean, that's what you'd be. I mean, my friends' kids were using iPads since they were 2 years old, and they can just, like you say, they whiz along. They can put the DVD on, check out a game on their iPad. But it's the future for kids. I mean, that's.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more difficult for people who come to it at an older age.
Yeah,
so especially I think for people with a well, say somebody with like sight loss.
Mm-hmm.
You, I think there's a fear factor.
Completely,
I'm
sure.
Like, you don't realise that it is doable, but from not knowing anything to learning something seems an awful long road.
Yeah. But I've noticed as well, if I've been on, because I would use my phone, I rarely use my laptop now, because I just do everything through my phone, Facebook, Twitter, all my emails, everything. And I start pointing at things now when I want something. I start hitting, like when I go to the cash point to get the money out.
I've been guilty of that one.
I start hitting the screen to get what I want. I forget to push the buttons on the side.
I walked over to the television the other night and actually started to run my finger around the screen, hoping it would do something.
But I think I'd be interested though, actually, for any of the listeners, if there's any technology out there that is supposed to help that you maybe find doesn't. Mm. And we'll maybe sort of chase up some of those stories and see if we can kind of get an answer for you.
And I also technology that really does help.
Yeah, exactly.
That anyone who's found anything very, very useful.
I tell you what doesn't help. What? My girlfriend went and got talking bathroom scales.
Oh,
no.
And
no,
that doesn't
help. No, 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 no.
I was shocked. Listeners, I was shocked and stunned when I found myself standing on it and it's talking to me. I thought, no, and we're not doing that again.
Total aside, I suppose it's a technology, but I was at a friend's wedding about 4 or 5 years ago, and sort of everyone had, I was the best man, and sort of there were half a dozen of us. We all went up sort of to the room afterwards for a glass of champagne, and there was one present that had been left, hadn't been opened, so the bride's ripping it away, and it was a set of bathroom scales. You don't give a bride a set of bathroom scales, so anything that reminds a woman how heavy she is on her wedding day.
No.
You just don't do it. So
I've always felt like the same weight, and then I was in somewhere recently and they had bathroom scales, and I was going, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, as I stood on them, and I'm a stone heavier.
Then you remember.
That knowledge, I can never get rid of that knowledge now.
I don't know where it is, because you're built like a pencil.
But for years I've been just
that sounded
thinking.
Insulting. I mean, like
in the best possible
a
way.
A lovely pencil.
A lovely pencil. Yeah.
With a pointy head.
Shall we move on?
Perhaps.
Well, here, so we'll come back to more technical stories a bit later on during the programme. But first, let's turn our attention to something entirely different. Now, we've mentioned before on Sound Vision Online about our Looking Forward Sight Loss Counselling and Peer Support Project. Ursula and Kevin from the project wanted to come in and tell us more about what they've been up to since the launch of the service last year.
Hello, my name's Ursula Ferguson, and my job here at RNIB is that I am the coordinator of the Looking Forward Project. I'm also a counsellor on the project, and I want to just explain a little bit today about what it is that we do here in Belfast, and indeed right across the whole of the province of Northern Ireland. Looking Forward is a free counselling service and peer support programme for older people. So if you fall into the category of aged 60 plus, then this potentially may be of interest to you, and that you are affected by sight loss. So let's talk about it. If you have lost or are losing your sight, you may be worried about how you're going to cope with that. Or you may feel depressed about the changes that you're facing, and perhaps you're experiencing feelings of sadness or anger or anxiety, and this is affecting you on a day-to-day basis. Or maybe it's causing you to worry about the future. And during these times, many people find it helpful to talk through their feelings with someone outside their usual circle of family and friends. So our counselling service offers the opportunity really to do that. We will give 6 sessions of face-to-face counselling to help you to get through these times. And at present, this service is available throughout Northern Ireland. So we here at the project, looking forward, is it's funded by the big lottery, and we're working in partnership with a couple of key organisations. One being the British Association for Counselling and Psychotherapy. So they're really there to support us. You know, we all work within an ethical framework as counsellors. So BACP are there to support and advise us. And then we're working alongside the Western Health and Social Care Trust and Good Morning Northern Ireland Network. And that is a free telephone support service for people living in rural community, or potentially those that are at risk of isolation or exclusion. So again, they are one of our partners. So what is it that we're doing here? Well, we really want, I mean, our aims are to provide practical and emotional support to blind or partially sighted people. The project will do that in two ways. One is through the counselling, and the other is through the peer support programme. And I know that my colleague Kevin has, he's going to follow up and let you know a little bit about the peer support specifically. So what is counselling? I mean, that's a question that people ask me. What is it? Well, counselling means talking things over with a skilled listener, and it can help you understand your feelings and think about ways of coping with the changes in your life. Counselling is not direct advice. It's help and support to explore your situation so that you can work out what is right for you. Another question that comes a lot to us is that, you know, is counselling right for me? Well, sight loss is different for everyone. So some people will want to get practical things sorted out before they can begin to think about how they feel, whilst others will not be able to make use of practical support until they've begun to deal with their feelings. And then some people will want to tackle both things together. So we really look at people as individuals and what it is that their needs are. So what do we do as a team? Well, we are a team of trained counsellors, and we have experience in support and in information and in counselling. So as I said, we'll offer you those 6 one-hour sessions face-to-face, talking about your situation and how you're feeling. And then following that, we will offer you access to peer support, which is an ongoing support, really looking at practical and emotional aspects of sight loss. We are committed to working practice that values equality and diversity. Once you give us your initial details, which we can do over the phone, you can make a referral yourself directly, so you don't have to ask anybody. And then again, we'll receive a referral from a third party, providing you've given your consent. And we'll contact you and arrange an appointment over the phone. And then we would want to offer you an opportunity to come into a centre near you. So as I said before, we're covering the whole of Northern Ireland. So we've got 10 venues that we're currently working from. They range from libraries to therapeutic centres to hotels. We work where the need is, and also that the priority really is that they're an accessible venue that makes it easier for everybody. So if you go on then to have the counselling from our service, the sessions will be arranged at a mutually convenient time, and will always be with the same counsellor. So you'll meet the same counsellor from start until end.
Hello, I'm Kevin Green. I'm the new peer support coordinator with RNIB here in Belfast. The peer support service will form part of an ongoing continuing support within the Looking Forward project following the counselling. And it will help clients and their partners and carers obtain both practical and emotional support in different areas. For example, this could be one-to-one over a cup of coffee or tea, or a group of people meeting together to support each other or have an over-the-phone conversation. My role as coordinator is to facilitate these groups to help people feel less isolated, more supported and more socially engaged. This in turn can help reduce anxiety and improve self-esteem and confidence. The focus of the groups will very much be on what the group as a whole feel is a priority for them, empowering them to take control and to take the lead in how they wish the group to develop, as it will be peer support led. Currently, peer support groups have been established in Belfast, Derry, Londonderry, and proved very helpful to all that have attended. It is RNIB's focus to establish a group in Coleraine, Enniskillen and a Charles Bonney Syndrome group before August 2015. The overall target of the service is to have 5 peer support groups established by August 2015 and overall 12 peer support groups in Northern Ireland within the next 18 months. We also wish to recruit 24 peer support volunteers to help sustain the groups.
Although we do not have a crisis line or offer befriending, we can give information about other services and help in contacting them. Obviously, if you're listening to this and you're feeling, okay, I am in crisis and I could do with some support, then there are some helplines out there that we would recommend that you contact. There's the Samaritans on 0845 790 9090 or Lifeline, which is 24 hours a day. You can contact them on 0808808000. If indeed you're interested in contacting us here at Looking Forward, then we'll welcome a phone call directly to our services here at RNIB. You can lift the phone and contact us on 02890 329 373. That'll put you through to the main desk and you just ask for the Looking Forward programme. Or indeed, if you would like to email us, we have our own email address and that is lookingforward@rnib.org.uk. Or indeed, if you want to find out more information about our services and what we do here in RNIB, you can contact us or look up our information on www.rnib.org.uk/Northern Ireland.
Now, today I've got Joanne Wilson and Joe Aspen with me, and we're here to talk about RNIB's Online Today project. Online Today is a project funded by the Big Lottery, which will provide digital skills training for people with sight and hearing loss. Guys, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Jill.
Joanne, maybe if I just start with you, just maybe if you just give us a little bit of background, what is Online Today?
Okay, so Online Today is a Big Lottery funded project over 3 years to give people with sensory loss basic online skills.
So in a nutshell, if you're out there and you want to learn a little bit more about getting online to the internet, that kind of thing, basically call us here in RNIB Northern Ireland and there's several members of staff who can train people, isn't that right?
We do. We have staff and we also have volunteers involved in the training. And there's lots of different types of training available. So the best thing to do is just give us a call and we can have a chat and discuss what the right option for you is.
If I didn't know much about this, how was that training delivered or what could I expect?
Okay, well, most of our training is all one-to-one, which means that it can be totally tailored to the individual. It could be training on things like the iPad, on the iPhone, on different tablets and devices, different Android tablets and devices, or JAWS or Zoom text. It really is down to what you would like to be trained on, and we are offering quite a wide range of training. There can be one-to-one introduction sessions, which are up to 2 hours, and that could just give you a little bit of an idea about what's out there, what's accessible, and what sort of things that you can do with all this technology. Or you could think about going on to a 6-week course, which again is one-to-one, and it can be 6 weeks tailored to your interests. So people do things like emailing, social networking, shopping online, getting their audiobooks, really whatever your interest in, we try to accommodate you.
I think too, because meeting especially some people out there maybe of an older age, they have an image of maybe online as being something for the young people or something that, so what difference would that make to me?
Yeah.
But what we're trying to say is, you know, this is a part of your everyday life. It can make your shopping for your groceries or for clothes or whatever it is, exactly. a lot more accessible.
And a lot of people have, I've come across a lot of people who have family at the other side of the world that it actually just makes staying in touch with much easier, because you can do things like video call and Skype and FaceTime and all those sorts of things. And that really helps with isolation as well. And I'm putting an end to that for a lot of people. Fear is a major factor for people not getting online. You know, people are afraid of technology. And I think especially as adults, we're afraid even more of breaking it or of doing something wrong. And that really isn't the case. And the one-to-one training breaks down a lot of those barriers, you know, and just gives you that more tailored experience to help your confidence.
What about if I was interested in trying this and maybe giving you a call, but I didn't have a device, I didn't have an iPhone or...
That's absolutely no problem. We actually have a kit here. So it's not a requirement of the training, either the introduction or the progressive training, that you have your own device. You can certainly just come along and get a feel for it before you decide if you want to get something. So you don't need to have your own device to partake.
Okay, sitting beside you, Joanne, we have Joe Aspen. Joe, you've just finished 6 weeks of training. Tell me, what sort of things did you explore in the training?
How to use the iPad properly, using calendar.
And is it, so you'd be an Apple iPad and iPhone user, is that right?
Yeah, yes.
And tell me, before the training, what difficulty did you have, or what brought you to the decision to come and receive training?
Well, it was with the iPad, you go to the Apple shop and they just tell you this, that and the other, like, you know, and it's just da-da-da, and it's quick and done. But, you know, the RNIB, like, they just break it down as easy as you can take it.
Yeah.
And, you know, learn a lot more.
So what difference would this now make? What do you think that you'd be able to leave with knowing more about?
Well, as I say, with the iPhone, it's the... There's the speech pull down, and it just reads everything to you. The other one is the magnification, which very good. Since I've come on to the, you know, the increased screen, you know, it is, it's very good.
Excellent.
Very good.
So to all those people sitting at home, maybe listening to this, who maybe would have fear of technology maybe or something, what would you say to them about the training?
Don't be afraid of new technology, and just go out there and find the best way around it. Oh, it's a great help. You know, I was away on holiday there the other week, and you use the EasyJet app, and it's, you know, you just go in, there's none of this queuing up or, you know, waiting, and they just take your boarding passes and away you go.
So, Joanne, if people want to find out more about Online Today, funded by the Big Lottery, how would they do that?
Contact myself here at RNIB. My contact number is 90329373, and I can have a chat with you and discuss what your options are.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, I wish us all the very best. And Joe, thanks very much for coming in and telling a little bit about what digital skills training means for you.
Very welcome. Sure.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm with Thomas Quigley here now. Thomas is our Campaigns Officer here in RNIB Northern Ireland. Thomas, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
Thomas, you're here today to talk to us about the Museums in Focus project.
Yes. So Museums in Focus is, it's essentially a touring project, if you like. We're touring an exhibition at the moment entitled A Sense of the Past, and that was born out of a book we commissioned a number of years ago. So this particular aspect, entitled Museums in Focus, is a Heritage Lottery funded project, and it's to bring our exhibition around Northern Ireland to various museums, whilst also training museum staff to make their museums and future exhibitions more accessible for blind and partially sighted people.
Well, that's great. Well, we'll talk a little bit about the training of the museum staff in a moment. But firstly, when you say exhibition, what sort of things are being exhibited?
Okay, so the exhibition is based on the book A Sense of the Past, and that's a social history of blindness in Northern Ireland. It's the first time anyone has looked into that aspect. So the exhibition consists of six panels, or pop-up stands if you like, which represent various chapters in the book. Now, each panel also has a PenFriend label on it, so that when you run the PenFriend over that, it'll describe the panel and everything that's on it. But we also have a table of artifacts, and that's various things from down, well, from the last couple of hundred years that blind people would have used, be it in education or in the workplace. So it's a combination of panels and artifacts.
And I suppose, what led RNIB Northern Ireland to doing something like this?
I suppose the fact that it had never been done before. You know, there's a lot of other charities would have explored, I suppose, the history of certain disabilities, and we were conscious that that had never been done here. So through a previous grant from the Heritage Lottery Fund, we actually we researched, or we employed researchers to look into this, and that was for the book. So we set up a steering group and to look at all the various aspects of chapters in this book, such as welfare, rights, education, employment, health and social care, leisure, and it was really just to try and illustrate the changes that blind and partially sighted people have experienced in, you know, relatively speaking, quite a short period of time.
Yeah, because imagine in 200 years, I mean, even society's, you know, perception of someone who's blind has changed dramatically.
Well, I mean, it's incredible, and even not as far back as that, but, you know, blind people would have been, in a lot of cases, sort of hidden away, you know, in I suppose, shunned from society. And that was, as I suppose, that was of the time, and you know, the same for most, if not all, disability groupings. So just the changes in that, or the changes in schooling, or the employment opportunities alone. I mean, there are parts of the book that have highlighted, you know, some inspirational people from the past as well, but they're very few and far between, and it certainly did not represent the majority.
Well, you mentioned there too at the start there about the other aspect of this touring exhibition being that you training museum staff.
Yes, so one of the aspects of the I suppose, Museums in Focus project is that we take the exhibition around, eventually it'll be 10, if not more, museums across Northern Ireland. And as part of the project, we have committed to providing visual awareness training to all staff in each venue. So prior to the exhibition being launched, we go in, we do the awareness training session with all staff who are relevant. We also demonstrate the PenFriend devices, which I mentioned before, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are aware of those.
It's available in the RNIB shop, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. It's an audio labelling device, and in this instance we label the exhibition panels and all the artefacts, so that there's descriptions, audio descriptions of those for people going around the exhibition. So we demonstrate those. We also provide each museum with 5 of those as part of the project to make future exhibitions more accessible, and obviously we instruct them on how to do that, and to date we've had a very good response. We're in our second year now, so we're currently at our 7th venue, and it's going very well. It's very successful, and we've had nothing but positive feedback from all museums and or arts and cultural centres that the exhibition has currently visited.
I suppose, I mean, to somebody who works in a museum, something like the PenFriend can really open their eyes to the fact that making an exhibition isn't such a difficult thing to do.
It's been quite incredible, the response we have got, because I suppose prior to this, you know, certain museums have made efforts in including blind and partially sighted people, but, you know, they genuinely just weren't sure how to do it. And this particular device has really opened up a whole new section of the public for these museums, and they're, you know, the response, as I said, has been overwhelmingly positive. They're delighted that they have this this piece of technology now that can open up all their exhibitions to blind and partially sighted people, because, it's quite incredible the amount of even blind people themselves who go, you know, who think, well, museums aren't accessible to me. You know, it's just, well, what's the point in me walking around a museum? I'm blind myself, and that would have been my attitude. I'm not going to hide behind anything. And this has just completely, you know, opened museums up, and the staff are just delighted to take it on board, obviously. And you know, of course, just with a little bit of training and instructions, can make future exhibitions as accessible as possible for ourselves.
You mentioned there that it's at the 7th venue. Tell us a little bit about where it's at now and where it's going next.
Yeah, so we're currently in Coleraine Town Hall in the museum that's based in there. The exhibition launched there on the 5th of May and will remain there until the end of June. Then we're moving on to the Tower Museum in Derry, and it will remain there through July and August. At which time we take the tour to Armagh, the Armagh County Museum. So it'll stay in Armagh for September and October, and there are a few more venues to be announced, and we'll be able to do that later in the year as the project runs right up until the end of March next year.
That's fantastic. Well, Thomas, it does sound like a really intriguing and really interesting way to spend. If anyone's listening and you're near one of those venues, I definitely recommend going and seeing. Of course, it's free of charge, isn't it?
It's totally free of charge, and as I say, all the staff will be trained in visual awareness, so there should be no problems in staff guiding you around if that's what you need. And there's pen friends on site, so you can have a look as well. And if anyone would like any more information, of course, you can just go on to the RNIB website and search for A Sense of the Past.
Well, Thomas, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Now, earlier you heard us talking at some considerable length about our technical devices and issues. But what happens if you have a new gadget or techie device that everyone's told you is dead easy to use, and you get it home and you can't use it, or you just can't get it set up quite right, all because you have a sight problem? Well, if that sounds familiar to you, RNIB run a technology support squad, a team of willing volunteers who will visit you at home and hopefully help resolve any techie problems you might be having. So Joe caught up with John McKinney and Anne Crane to find out more.
To mark Volunteers Week 2015, I thought we'd have a chat with Anne Crane, one of our volunteer development advisors here in RNIB Northern Ireland. And with her is John McKinney, who works with the Technology Support Squad, which we'll chat about in a wee second. But first of all, Anne, maybe you could tell us a little bit about volunteering in Northern Ireland. How many volunteers currently work with us at the moment?
Well, currently we have almost 270 volunteers that are working right across our services. So those volunteers would do stuff like working with our children's team, so weekends away. They would do also admin, reception work. We have tandem cyclists, pilots. We have all sorts of volunteering opportunities that are available here in Northern Ireland. The work of the volunteers really supports all the work that we do right across the board.
It's probably fair to say that we couldn't probably do as much as RNIB Northern Ireland does without the work of our volunteers.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. The work of those volunteers really, really does help extend our reach. And obviously our goal is to provide the best service that we can to those who have sight loss in the Northern Ireland community.
Indeed. And so today, because John's with us today, I thought we'd turn our attention to the Technology Support Squad. Now, some of our listeners may not know or may not have encountered that before. Perhaps, Anne, you could tell us a little bit about...
Yeah, the Technology Support Squad exists to help people with sight loss to access technology. So generally, the Technology Support Squad will take requests for help and will go and visit somebody in their home. One of the key priorities of RNIB is to help people maintain their independence, and we know that technology is a really major part of that. But we also know that setting up technology can be really difficult and just present lots of challenges. So the RNIB Technology Support Squad is there to provide a free service that can help you set up technology in your home.
Okay, so you're talking like anything from televisions, radios, through to more specialist equipment, say like computers or iPads or...
Exactly, yeah. So commonly our team would go out and set up digiboxes, tune TVs, set up iPads. They would maybe program mobile phones, look at ebook readers and audio labellers. Any manner of technology, we have a volunteer force that are happy to help.
Okay, so John, just bring you in. Tell me, in your experience, well, firstly, how long have you been with the Technology Support Squad?
For about 35 years, Joe, since 1980.
That's quite extraordinary. I actually didn't know that. That's quite amazing, 35 years. Yeah. So tell me, first of all, how did you get involved or what brought you to that?
At that time, I worked for what is now BT. It was probably Post Office Telephones then. And quite a number of people helped out in those days who worked for BT. Because in those days, it was talking book players, which were very mechanical, and the BT people had this sort of experience from working with electromechanical equipment.
And so then you did you approach RNAB yourself then, or?
I was approached by someone I worked with in BT, who also did volunteering at that time.
Nowadays, what sort of things would you? What sort of things would you encounter if you get a call out or an appointment to go and see someone?
Well, it could still be talking book players, although nowadays they're very much different from the old tape players. It could be tablet computers, it could be Windows computers with screen readers, could be phones, smartphones, or fairly basic phones. It can be ordinary landline phones as well. It just can be any technology, tuning TVs, for example, especially at the time of the digital switchover.
Of course. That was actually fairly recently. I remember covering that in Sound Vision Online. So, I mean, I suppose a person with sight loss is at home and they realise that they've either purchased or they've encountered a piece of equipment or technology that they want to use, they want to get to going in their home. But they've suddenly realised that, well, let's face it, the instructions or the manual are pretty much inaccessible to them. And then I suppose that's where you guys come in.
Yeah, that's correct. They would call the help desk or helpline, and they in turn would send me an email, well, through a coordinator in Northern Ireland.
And then you make the appointment and go out
yes,
and see them?
I will call them and arrange to visit, if a visit is necessary. Sometimes a visit's not necessary. We can also use remote support software if it's computer-based.
And what about, would you do something over the phone even, if someone needed just a bit of advice?
Yes, sometimes that's the case, yes. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes, especially now with older talking book players, you find that there's very little you can do. You realise that from talking to them, for talking to the person who has the player.
I get in the sense too that even though technology has moved on a lot and there's all sorts of things on offer from high street stores, etc. these days, talking book players are still a major part of what people come to the Technology Support Squad about, is it?
Probably, yes. Largely because they're more specialised. Tablet computers and computers generally, there are probably family members who can help them with that sort of thing.
One of the key messages of the Technology Support Squad is that there are lots and lots of options for people with sight loss who want to continue reading. We actually have a role that we're currently advertising for now for volunteers on, and it's called the Reader Support Role. And that would involve helping people with sight loss to understand the options that are available to them. So from talking books and the adaptation of those, like John's mentioning, right through to Kindles and iPads, through to our own RNIB Overdrive, which is available to help people access reading themselves.
Totally, yeah. So it's just to kind of educate and to go, like, these options are here.
Absolutely. And that service also operates in the home. So if somebody were to find themselves that they maybe can't make it down to the local library, or they just want somebody to come and sit with them and explain their options, then that service is available too in Northern Ireland.
Fantastic. John, I imagine you and the rest of the guys, there must be an awful lot of... you have to learn and train all the time to actually keep on top of things, do you?
Yes.
It sounds like it.
Google is probably our best friend.
Very good. I think that's the same. I think it goes for most people these days. Yeah. You're lost without Google.
Yeah.
That's fantastic, John. Thanks very much. And just, I suppose, how many people are in the Technology Support Squad here in Northern Ireland?
In Northern Ireland, we have 12 people that are currently operating across the province. The vast majority of those are based in Belfast and surrounding areas. We're always looking for more volunteers, partly because we want to extend our reach, partly because we want to offer services in areas, particularly in the northwest and the western areas, that we maybe wouldn't have so many volunteers in. So if any of your listeners are interested in volunteering for us, then we would be delighted to hear from anybody that has technology skills that would be interested. And they can do that through our website, rnib.org.uk/volunteering. And the start of the Online Today project, which has a goal to get people who currently have very, very limited digital skills, to give them the skills they need to get online. That project is happening right over the next 3 years all across Northern Ireland. So there's lots of training taking place that your listeners can access if they would like to. And again, they can do that either through the website or by phoning the helpline. In Northern Ireland, the sessions that we're doing are generally one-to-one, and they can take place in somebody's home if they're unable to leave the home, or they can take place here in the RNIB offices or throughout libraries across Northern Ireland. It's a really good service, so I'd really encourage anybody that is not confident with getting online to get in touch. And the course is run over, I think it's a 6-week period, and they get one-to-one support, and it's just a really great way of increasing independence and confidence.
That's great. Well, listen, I'm always fascinated to hear about the roles that our volunteers do, because I mean, I think there's so many things out there that I don't know about, and I know a little bit about a lot of things. But listen, John and Anne, thank you very much indeed for chatting to me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have technology skill and you think that you might be able to give some time to our volunteer technology support squad, you can find out all the information on our website. That's rnib.org.uk/volunteering. And if you live with sight loss and you want to find out more about the Technology Support Squad service, just give our helpline a ring. That's 0303 123 9999. Well, I'm thrilled today to be in the company of Kelly Gallagher, Winter Paralympic Champion, Sochi 2014. Kelly, you're very welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
I mean, well, there's so much we could talk about. I mean, 2014 was such an amazing year for you, as I'm sure you, I'm sure you'll agree.
It was really great. Obviously, like, when I went to the Games, I was hoping to compete in all, well, I did compete in all five events, but I was hoping for them all to go really well. So it wasn't actually until I came home with my one gold that I kind of realised what a big impact it had. Here, I was really lucky to have the coverage and the exposure, you know, with people being able to watch it on television with Channel 4 covering the,
absolutely,
the
yes,
games. And then the way that I was embraced here in Northern Ireland with the media and stuff, it was really, really great. But not to raise my own profile, but to show people, whether they've got disabilities or children with disabilities, or whether they've never even encountered anyone with a disability, but they were able to see those achievements and have a look at what Charlotte and I do on snow. It was really exciting. That was one of the best things, really, is to be able to see how much people have been able to see the ski racing.
The one thing I heard a few people say was they didn't really imagine the speed that you actually do travel at. At full, when you start at full tilt, how, you actually mentioned to me earlier, how fast is it?
So we're about 110 kilometres per hour, which is about 75 miles per hour, which is what you're driving on the motorway when you're going full gas kind of thing. So I'm travelling with Charlotte in front of me, and all I can see, obviously, is her fluorescent orange bib. And then I'm really close to her, and we're just hauling down the slope. So I think you could describe that to people, but unless they actually feel it by seeing it, they don't really understand it. They can listen to you saying it, and then they're like, but they don't have an appreciation of it. And then when they saw us skiing, it was quite difficult for them people to be able to accommodate the word blind or visually impaired with seeing, you know, the top ski racers in the world come down a slope together. So it was something that was really changing perceptions. And I didn't really believe in the idea of legacy or changing perceptions or all that kind of stuff that I thought was kind of a theoretical, kind of floaty word that people talked about in, you know, British Paralympic Association or in the International Paralympic Committee. But it is slowly changing. The fact now that bid cities for the Olympics and Paralympics have to put in a joint bid together is making it so that countries are having to put on the Paralympic Games. And then when they bid for the rights to show the Olympics, they're taking the Paralympics too. And they're having, you know, journalists are having to interview us, which means that we're getting more coverage, which means that eventually in 20 or 30 years, possibly sponsors would be interested in investing in Paralympic athletes because we're getting more coverage. So it's a really slow process, like everything is, and it's difficult being an impatient athlete and wanting to show the world what you're capable of, but it's nice to see the wee small steps.
I certainly don't remember the Paralympics ever getting as much coverage as it did in 2014.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, if you think back to Beijing in 2008, I don't really remember too much. And then Vancouver 2010, we didn't have anything. We were at the Winter Games. And then you think of what they did in London. It was, the sponsors were the same. When the sponsors were sponsoring the Olympics, they were also covering the Paralympics. And I think that's been a real progression. And I think there's been a real appetite for Olympic sport anyway. So, it's interesting to see how the systems in sport are changing. Obviously, we still have professional sport where it comes like from Formula One, golf, rugby, cricket, and it's very much male dominated men's sport that gets the coverage, gets the sponsorship, gets on the back pages. I mean, I'm still interviewed about my personal life, and like I'm still a feature in when I'm in the newspaper rather than actual sport, because we're not really covered. But eventually it will change where we're on the back pages of newspapers as Paralympic and women's athletes and winter athletes.
Just for any listeners out there who maybe can't imagine what it is you're talking about, Could you take us through like what happens when you and Charlotte get ready to go down the slope? How does it work?
So we'll start off side by side. I'll be the person who's timed. Charlotte's time isn't taken because obviously she's in front and she starts before me. So she would say like 3, 2, 1, go. She would go on the one to get in front of me and I would go on the go. Sometimes I get a bit excited and go a little bit quick. But I basically have to be close to her, but not too close. And she has to try and lead me down the slope by kind of making me go a little bit faster. She wears this fluorescent orange bib and we have Bluetooth radio communications that'll be in our helmets. So I can hear her and she can hear me just like we're speaking now. Mm-hmm. And everyone just assumes that you're saying left and right and that she's kind of describing the surroundings, but that's not actually that useful. I can obviously feel the ground through my skis. I can feel, if it's sliding away from me. I can feel if it's hard snow and I'm able to move. On that, Charlotte's experience and everything, maybe a half a second before me or a wee bit less. So she's kind of skiing and telling me things that she's doing in order to be in a better body position to be able to take the turns quicker.
Uh-huh.
So what she'll be doing is looking ahead and thinking to herself what she's going to be doing. As she's experiencing it, she'll be telling me and then I'll be receiving that information, and I work very much on what she's anticipating telling me, and then I'm working from what I can feel underneath. So
tell me a little bit about life since winning the gold medal. How's it changed?
That's
a very big question.
I wouldn't say my life's changed since winning the gold medal. It's definitely really strange to still be congratulated about a race that you did over a year ago. So people that I haven't seen are still saying, congratulations. I'm like, yeah, okay. It's like, I've done like hundreds of races. So that's a very strange feeling to still be like given an accolade like again and again and again. I feel like every time someone congratulates me, I'm like, oh yeah, I won. Yeah, that's cool. And you kind of think, I don't know, if you're a chef and you make a really good meal, I don't think like years after people are still thanking you. But that seems to be what skiing is. Some of the most extraordinary things that happened was like being nominated for BBC Sports Personality of the Year.
Absolutely, I was going to come on to that.
Yeah, only 10 people, 10 athletes in the UK and abroad and stuff were nominated. And it was really special for us as, as a team or as athletes, Charlotte and I, not to have a big PR team behind us, a big management team. There's no money behind us. It's just us and our sport. So then being up there with Rory and Lewis and Joe Pavey and all of the athletes that have big governing bodies and have professional sport behind them, it was really exciting. It was just a surreal experience as well to see the kind of people coming in their private jets and their entourages and stuff. I was a bit like, okay, we got here on Ryanair or a budget airline anyway. But it was interesting. But the main point about it was to be able to stand up there and actually have something to say. So we had something to say, which was being given a microphone and being able to stand and talk on BBC about sport. Mm-hmm. And show people that it is a competitive sport, and that it's not just two girls going away skiing and having fun. That we're ranked number one in the world, and we're champions. We're at the pinnacle of our sport, and that we achieved that together. That was really special for me. it was really important, and I like the idea that children and parents got to be able to see us on television, on mainstream television, and that was in alongside with all of the mainstream men's professional sport. That was exciting for me. For 4 years, I spent my whole time putting skiing first, above everything, above my friends and family, and I wouldn't ever compromise on anything. If training meant that I had to do something that meant that I had to cancel plans with somebody else, or I had to not go to weddings, or not, you know, I had to go to, you know, all my friends know that I go to bed really early and get up really early, and I eat well and, you know, stop drinking and all that kind of stuff. Not that I, you know, was hard on the drink, but like, do you know what I mean? Like, I just, there was no celebration.
Your
because what
physical
you were
fitness,
yeah, what you were kind of, you had this overall goal, and there was nothing that we didn't do that if something was compromising your overall goal, you'd just kind of discard it and stuff. So it did mean a lot, and you're in this bubble where you think it's the only thing that matters. Since then, I've kind of realised that it does matter a lot, but like, you have to have like a perspective kind of thing. I think for Sochi, we were so, and I don't want to say desperate to win, but we were so focused to be able to win that we got to the stage where it broke my heart whenever my ski came off, or like whenever I didn't have the time kind of right. Like, we were really, really focused in a bubble that meant that we couldn't have any perspective on anything else, because we were like, we machines that were like, we've got to win a gold, that's all kind of thing. And there was a lot of pressure on us as well.
Tell me a little bit about, so what are you doing at the moment in terms of I know that you had wasn't the World Championships just on recently?
Yeah, I had a really disappointing season, which is difficult because what I kind of thought of this season was that I was nearly in my head making up for Sochi. So I know that in Sochi we won our gold, but the other four races went really disappointing. I was really disappointed with the outcomes of the other races, not with the way I skied or like the way that I'd prepared, but I was disappointed. So I'd kind of hoped that this year would be, I was, you know, maybe naive to think that like everything would get suddenly better after Sochi, that, you know, once we won a gold, that we were going to turn into an incredibly professional sports team. We weren't going to have any worries ever again. But I gave Charlotte a concussion, I guess, because I tripped over her skis and clipped the back of them. So she kind of head face planted into the ground. And I just thought she would recover sooner, but she hasn't. So she's still struggling at the moment. And that's from January. So concussion's really difficult. So she's still recovering. And we weren't really able to achieve what we wanted to because we couldn't go to World Championships. So it's been quite a deflating season. But hopefully we'll be able to reassess and do a lot of work in the gym this summer and then come back doing well next season.
So finally, just before I let you go, Kelly, what would you say when people use the words like inspirational or things like that? How does that make you feel?
It does feel like uncomfortable because you kind of think like, I don't feel any different to anybody else kind of thing. I know that everyone's on their own wee path of what they're doing, and I'm on my own wee path and getting on with what's going on. But I do like love the idea of helping people from the experience that I've had. I love the idea that if there's a byproduct of it. So when we did get emails from parents and children and Facebook messages and tweets and stuff of people being like, oh, it's so cool to see someone with albinism or someone with a visual impairment, you know, doing so well. The idea that then if I'm able to help out kind of thing, that's kind of what I would like to be doing kind of thing. So I suppose maybe if you want to put the label inspirational on it, I guess you could. But really, I just want to help wherever I can kind of thing. And I still want to be a ski racer, number one. But at the same time, if I'm able to get involved with activities and stuff to be able to encourage people to, I think it's not so much get involved in sport, but like get out and do whatever they want to do. If I'm able to, I've done well because I was encouraged, and because everywhere I went, I was signposted to somebody. If they couldn't help, they would signpost me to someone who could help. And that's something I really enjoy in ski racing. When somebody doesn't know something, they're like, well, I don't know that, but I know that someone who does know it. And that's the type of people I like to work with. So I'd kind of like to be able to do that for other people, families and young people and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Well, Kelly, it's been fascinating talking to you. I could talk for hours, but I better let you go. But listen, yeah, Thanks for coming in and talking to us.
No bother. Thank you very much.
Well, it's technology, technology, technology this time in Sound Vision Online. Next up, we're going to hear from Jackie Brown and her tech chat. And this time she's going to tell us how to say something to Siri.
One of the really useful features of having an iPhone is being able to use Siri. And I'm going to demonstrate in what ways Siri is particularly useful to blind and visually impaired people when using an iPhone. With me, I have my iPhone 6, and I'm going to demonstrate Siri so that you can hear the voice and see some of the tasks that you can also get your Siri friend to do for you. So I'll start with some simple things and then work my way through a sort of a small list here of tasks that he'll do for us. So first of all, I'll ask Siri the time. What time is it?
The time is 10:26.
Okay, so you heard Siri say that. Now, I'll ask him perhaps to tell me a bit about the weather. What is the weather forecast for today?
Okay, the temperature today will range between 1 and 9 degrees.
Will I need an umbrella?
Yes, we should see some rain between today and the 22nd of March 2015.
So there you have it. Siri's informed me that I will need an umbrella at some point during the next few days. So there are very simple tasks that you can get it to do. All you have to do is hold down the home button, which is the round button at the bottom of the iPhone. Hold it down until you hear the bleep and then speak to Siri. The best thing to do is to speak reasonably clearly and slowly so that hopefully you will get him to understand what it is you want to do. So I'll go on with something else now. Maybe I'll ask him to send me a text to somebody. I'd like to send a text message.
Who shall I text?
I'd like to send a text to Joe Kenny.
Okay, what do you want to say to Joe Kenny?
Hello, Joe. This is Jackie Brown, full stop. I am dictating this message using my iPhone and Siri, full stop.
Your message to Joe Kenny says, Hello Joe, this is Jackie Brown. I am dictating this message using my iPhone and Siri. Ready to send it?
No.
Okay, I won't send it just yet. Let me know when you're ready to continue.
And that is a sort of a small conversation that you can have with Siri. So I didn't send that text message to Joe, but I could if I'd wanted to. And if I had said yes, then Siri would have sent the message. So that is really useful because not everybody likes using touchscreen technology. And even though I'm fairly proficient at using it now, there are still occasions where it is useful to be able to send a text without having to use my finger and go on a touchscreen keyboard. So there are things like that. You can get Siri to dial numbers for you as well. So if I were to ask Siri to dial my number, for example, he would do that for me. So if you're, for instance, out and about and you have your data plan, your carrier's data turned on, then you can use Siri. You can't use Siri if you don't have data plan outside, though. So if you don't have internet data, it won't work until you get back home and use your Wi-Fi. So that's just something to bear in mind. Now, I've also got my iPad mini with me because my phone doesn't have any music on it, and I want to demonstrate the fact that Siri will play a tune, hopefully from your iTunes library if you have music. And I do have some on my iPad, so I'll ask Siri, if possible, to play a tune for me and see if he does. Play Bryan Adams.
Playing Bryan Adams, Shuffled.
I got my first real six string. Oh, it had the five and done. Played it till my fingers bled. Was the summer of 69.
Okay, so you get the gist of that. If you have a tune in your library, Siri will play that track if you ask him to. So that is quite useful. So as you can see, there are quite a few uses for Siri. When I first got my iPhone, I found it really funny and I thought it was a real gimmick, you know, to have something like Siri asking it questions. But actually, there are some real uses for it. if you want to, say, ask it questions like, who is the Prime Minister, how many people live in the UK, things like that, it's very good at responding to questions like that as well, I found. So I've sort of teased it in a way and asked it some really ridiculous things, and it's worked out as well. So I'll have another go and just show you. I'll ask Siri a couple of other questions as well, just to demonstrate that he, you know, it is really quite versatile. What time is sunset today?
Sunset will be at 18:25 today.
When is the next full moon?
Looking up moon. I found quite a number of films matching moon. Moon. Transformers, Dark of the Moon. And Blood Moon Rising. Would you like to hear the entire list?
No, thank you. So as you can see, sometimes Siri thinks that when you're asking it one question, it tends to interpret it as another. But, you know, that can be quite funny at times. But it's certainly a way of getting around your iPhone and your iOS devices. Siri has worked now from, I think, iOS 6 at least and upwards. And we're now on iOS 8.2, so it is improving all the time. Google has a feature on Android as well, and hopefully in the future I'll have a phone where I'll be able to demonstrate the equivalent of Siri on Google using Google Talk, and we'll see in a comparison how better or not so good it is. I think it is very good, but we'll try that next time. So I hope this has been useful. Try to make use of Siri on your iOS devices if you struggle with using the screen, or even if you don't and you just want to get Siri to carry out some tasks for you, it will. So if you want to make phone calls, send text messages, ask it to play music, or just want some other information, or even if you want Siri to launch an app on your phone for you, just ask it to launch something. Just remember to speak clearly and you might find Siri a useful companion.
At the beginning of April, RNIB Northern Ireland recruited the first Paediatric or Children's Eye Care Liaison Officer, or ECLO. Andy Morrow is now settling into her new role, so I thought it was high time I caught up with her to see how she's getting on. Andy, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Well, lovely to be here.
First of all, how long are you in post, Andy?
3 weeks. Yeah, it's 3 weeks just.
Wow. Three weeks.
And it's part-time for 21 hours, so I'm still trying to work out what days I need to be working, and I'm in and out of the office and up at the hospital a lot, so it's a bit confusing.
Okay, and whereabouts would you be based?
It will be based at the Royal. It'll be on level 8 and ward 31 are the children areas.
But people not from Belfast, Royal is the Royal Victoria Hospital here, yes, in Belfast, isn't that right?
Sorry, yes, RVH.
Yes, we're talking to a UK-wide audience here.
Yes, apologies, you're talking to a Belfast girl. Yes, the Royal Victoria Hospital, based, it's just outside the city centre. So
tell me a little bit about life before getting the paediatric ECLO job.
Well, after I graduated from university, I moved to Holland for several years. And when I was out there, I was working in recruitment with the European Space Agency. I did that for a couple of years, then had children, came back here, did various different posts, but have been working in sort of recruitment and support of lone parents and finding employment, that sort of thing. And then I started working with RNIB in August of last year. So when I moved into the trainee grade scheme, working in the children and families team, organising events for children with sight loss. As part of the trainee grade scheme is to, you know, get help filling out application forms and getting you to move on to the next stage, because it's only a 50-week programme. I applied for the ECLO job, had to do a presentation and an interview, and happily got the job.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you. It's very exciting.
So tell me, in the role of ECLO for Children, what does that involve? What will you be doing?
Okay, well, I will be based in the hospital, in the Royal Victoria Hospital. Generally, you are talking to parents who've either just had a new diagnosis for their child or they've just become aware that their child has significant sight loss. The role as ECLO is there to support the parent and to support the family as well as the children. It's a little bit different. Children tend to just get on with things and don't really factor in their sight loss, especially if they're very young. They just generally don't see the difference and don't realise that they see things differently. So they just carry on. It's the parents that have the bigger traumas and the bigger problem accepting certain things. So as an ECLO, I would be there to take over from where the consultant has left them. So if a consultant says, yes, we can this is the diagnosis for your child, I would then step up and have a chat with the parents. And I think the first couple of appointments is often just listening to the families and seeing where their concerns are and what they need help with. Then we can progress into referring them into the sensory support team, doing educational referrals, and of course into the delightful children and families team, so they get to do the fun bits. When I refer them into children and families team, then they go into the family officer and they get the extra support there. And I would also be able to work with consultants and see what the process will be, what the prognosis is, and what the next steps will be for the child when they're at the hospital. But it's basically first point of contact, getting the parents in, giving them an idea of where we need to go next, and then moving them on, but at the parents at their pace, because they're the ones, you can't overload them with information. You need to go at their pace and what suits them.
You're like the bridge between the hospitals and the medical profession and then other sort of support services.
Yes, we are there to basically give that support and a little bit of knowledge within reason. We don't have any medical qualifications, so we don't do that. But we give as much knowledge as we can and try and just help families. It's a bit of a minefield when you don't know what to do next. I know from my own experiences, when I was registered as sight impaired, I didn't know what to do next. I was kind of left after the consultant went, yeah, we can do that. So I called RNAB myself and spoke to Susan Caskey in the end, and Susan helped me know what to do and where the next step was. I'd have been a bit lost without that.
Sounds to me like there's a definite, I mean, you must get to know the medical staff in the hospital quite well.
Yes, I think that's the intention. They are all very open and friendly. They were all very keen to have this paediatric ECLO come in to help their workload as well. I mean, if you look at sort of the financial side of it, the ECLO makes a massive impact financially to the consultants and their time. So basically, the consultants want to use it as well as, you know, once they've handed the family off, then they know that there is support for them and they're not just left there to go off and Google things by themselves.
You touched on it there just briefly, but what need was identified for a paediatric ECLO in terms of, like, where did the idea come from?
I know that there was a large amount of referrals coming through for children. I deal with Belfast and South Eastern Trust areas. Northern Ireland is divided up into 5 trust areas. The hospital that I'm in is based in Belfast, so it's mostly children from Belfast and South Eastern areas. But they had seen that there was an increase in children being referred in, and I know RNIB had worked in conjunction with the consultants who were very keen to have an ECLO solely dedicated to the children's clinics. There was a large number of cases coming through and they felt that an ECLO should be dedicated to the children's eye clinic.
So how does it feel to be the first paediatric or children's ECLO? I mean, it's trailblazing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, apparently it's the first in the UK.
Do you feel the weight of responsibility?
I'm starting to feel the pressure. I have to say, though, it's very exciting. It's very challenging, but it's also so interesting. I've got really into it. I'm very keen to do it. And I really enjoy working with the kids as well as the parents. So it's a good thing, but it's a wee bit scary to think it's the first ever. But we need to make this work really well so that everywhere gets one.
Finally, Andy, just somebody listening to this, how would they get in touch with RNAB's Eye Care Liaison Officer Service or ECLO Service here in Northern Ireland?
It is, you can either ask your consultant about it when you're up at having an appointment, and they will fill in a green form, which is just your contact details, and then they give that to the ECLO if they're not about. Or you can just call in RNIB, call in the hotline,
and self-referral, and then we can give you a call back and have a chat and see what sort of help we can give you, where we can refer you on to, maybe what information you're missing and where is the best thing to do next. So call into RNIB or speak to your consultant.
And just give a number out if you live in Northern Ireland, you wish to talk to any of our ECLO or indeed anybody from the RNIB support services, just call 0289032933. Andy, it's been fascinating talking to you.
Thank you very much.
I do get the sense we could talk all day.
Probably if you let me, yes. So that's probably why it's better you don't.
But unfortunately, I've got to go draw to a close summer. But Andy, yes. it's been great. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Sound Vision Online News and Event Guide, July, August and September. A Sense of the Past exhibition. A Sense of the Past exhibition and book will continue its tour, arriving at the Tower Museum, Derry, Londonderry, for the months of July and August. Following that, it will make its way to the County Museum, Armagh. Part of the Museums in Focus project and funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund, this exhibition and accompanying book explore the social history of blindness in Northern Ireland through display panels with a special talking feature and tactile artefacts dating from 1800s. This provides a fascinating insight into the social attitudes towards blind people in the past, some of which are quite shocking to us today. Admission is free. Copies of the Sense of the Past book will be available from each venue or by contacting RNABNI on 028 9032 9373. The publication is available in accessible formats to people with sight loss, including Braille, clear print and audio. One-to-one lessons for children with sight loss. Would your child benefit from boosting their confidence and skills? RNIBNI's Realise project offers children aged 8 to 20 years with sight loss across Northern Ireland one-to-one tuition in a variety of activities, such as swimming, music, IT or even flying lessons. The Realise project builds children and young people's confidence and skills to enable them to more confidently make the move from primary to post-primary school, post-primary to third level education and on to full-time employment. To book one-to-one lessons in an activity of your choice or simply find out more about Realise, contact Donna McNichol, Realise Project, on 028 7136 6060 or visit rnib.org.uk. The Realise Project is funded by the Big Lottery Fund through their Empowering Young People programme. Glow Neon 3K Fun Run. Inspired by the colourful full moon parties held in Thailand, Glow is a nighttime fun run with a difference. You'll run, walk or dance the 3 km route, sprayed with Glow water and lit up by an ultraviolet backlight as you go. It's a great way to spend an evening and raise money, promising to be even bigger and better than last year's. Why should I glow for Team RNIB? Everyone taking part will be there for Team RNIB. Your entry fees and sponsorship will go towards RNIB's services for blind and partially sighted people. Any additional funds would be greatly appreciated as we rely on the generosity of the public to fund our services. Every day 100 people in the UK start losing their sight. Right now RNIB can only reach 1 in 3 of the people who need our help most. Join Team RNIB and help us reach them all. We're having glow runs this year in several venues across the UK, but in particular, Belfast, Mary Peters Stadium, 16th of October. These events are open to those aged 10 and over and are fully accessible to blind and partially sighted participants. Guiding co-runners can be provided on request. Get sponsored to Glow. To help you reach your sponsorship target, you can set up a page on Just Giving. It's a fantastic way for your friends and family to spur you on and support your effort. And remember to share the link on Facebook and tweet about it on Twitter, #GlowNeon. There are plenty of volunteering opportunities from marshalling to being in our cheer squad at our Glow events. If you would like to get involved, email us at glow@rnib.org.uk or contact Hazel Sterling, Area Fundraising Manager, RNIB Northern Ireland on 028 9032 9373. Lisburn in Focus. Lisburn in Focus has organised a week of activities for young blind and partially sighted people and their siblings from Monday the 3rd of August. The types of things we will be doing are crafts, basketball, music workshops and outdoor activities. There will be a choice of activities each day, but anyone interested in coming must register with Lisburn in Focus. Ring 028 9260 0388, or email lisburnandfocus@rnib.org.uk for a registration form. Finding Your Feet. Lisburn and Focus is delivering one final Finding Your Feet programme for the Lisburn and Castlereagh Council area from the 16th to the 18th of September in the Burrendale Hotel in Newcastle. Finding Your Feet has been especially devised for people who have been diagnosed with sight loss and who are struggling to come to terms with it. The programme takes place over 3 days and offers a range of practical and emotional support workshops, culminating in a personal action plan for each participant. The closing date for application is the 31st of July. For more information or an application form, contact Lisburn and Focus on 08 9260 0388 or email lisburnandfocus@rnib.org.uk. Audio described theatre performances. Grand Opera House, Belfast, Saturday the 8th of August, 2:30 p.m, Sound of Music. Saturday the 12th of September, 2:30 p.m, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Saturday the 17th of October, 2:30 p.m, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night, with Touch Tour at 12:30 p.m. Wednesday the 6th of January, 7 p.m, Snow White, with the Touch Tour at 5:30 p.m. To book tickets, call the box office on 028 9024 1919. The Mac Belfast, 14th of October, Gulliver. You can read more about the show and prices on themaclive.com/shows/family-theatre-Gulliver. To book tickets, call the box office on 028 9023 5053. Lyric Theatre Belfast, Thursday the 24th of September, 7:45 p.m, Dancing at Lufnasa. Thursday 29th of October, 7:45 p.m, Night Alive. For more information or to book tickets, call the box office on 028 9038 1081 or visit www.lyrictheatre.co.uk. That's all the news and events for now, but please do send us any items of news that you wish to advertise on Sound Vision Online. Email soundvisiononline@rnib.org.uk.
That's about it for this edition of Sound Vision Online. Our thanks to everyone, as always, for sending in your ideas. Please do get in touch, because we very much love to hear what you think.
You can call us by the usual number, that's 0289032 9373. You can email soundvisiononline@rnib.org.uk. You can find us on Facebook, just search for RNIB Northern Ireland, or maybe Twitter at RNIBNI.
And don't forget to spread the word that anyone wishing to receive this very hot compilation CD, then contact us and be added to the new mailing list, and we'll be waiting.
And just a quick word, if you found yourself humming along to our theme tune for the past 10 years or so, we reckon it's been there. It doesn't owe us anything. We've decided we're going to give it a bit of a rest, and we're going to have something brand new for the next edition of Sound Vision Online, so do listen out for that. But for now, from all of us here on Sound Vision Online, supported by BT, from me, Michael Selby.
And from me, Sharon Jennings.
And me, Joe Kenny.
We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
RNIB Northern Ireland, supporting people with sight loss.